The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Suburban Furry Fairy Tales creator.
You're not wrong. There are furries in it.
Mr. Francis Bonet.
Hello, hello.
And we have Mr. Hassan Gavin back in parts unknown for this week's show.
I don't even want to comment on what I just heard, so I'm just gonna
I want to hear what you have to say.
No you don't keep going on with the show.
So on this week's show we have I do my review of the new Johnny Young Bosch independent film Spades, and L-Man Danny Feldy interviews filmmaker Young Ja Hoang. But before we do any of that, we're gonna take it away with the news.
It's more than time.
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi
for your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 27, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November the 21st, and tickets are on sale right now.
Woo-hoo!
So now, Hassan,
finally something.
You're humbled, Hassan. You're finally have tickets.
I'm not what? Humbled? Stop it.
He's never humbled.
No. Awesome. I'm glad we got something we're actually hawking now. So that makes me feel better.
And also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Gorilla, award-winning director Jared Burrell, News, Day Famous, Resident Media, Shad Rapid Art, Yasmin Array, The Huracan, Millie Portes, and GTS Comics. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. A little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a new discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 are on sale right now. And finally, on Wednesday, September 9th, at the East Meadow Public Library, we're going to have our 108th live show, and we're going to have multi-award-winning filmmaker Glenn McBride Jr. as a guest. Make sure you go there and check us out, 7 p.m. All right, so that was it. What?
Just kind of seemed to run out of steam right there, that's all. and then we're going to do this, and then when, I don't know, go ahead. See,
yeah,
you
had to
want.
Take a breath.
Yes, I had to take a breath, yes. So, as always, we start off with the sad news. Ready, Brian? Sad news. Voice actor Peter Claver Cullen died recently. While no official cause of death has been announced, it has been noted that Peter was fighting cancer for some time. Peter worked in a multitude of animated series, providing voices on such series as Mighty Man and Yuck. He played Mighty Man. Knight Rider, he was the voice of Car, the bad guy vehicle. He was in the Monty Cheese, the Biscuits, Saturday Supercade. He played Mario. He's one of the four voices of Mario. He was in Dungeons and Dragons. He was in Voltron Legendary Defender. He was in Rambo Bright. He was in Challenge of the GoBots. He was in G.I. Joe. He was in Rambo the Force of Freedom. He was in Filmation's Ghostbusters animated series. He was in Visionary's Knights of the Magical Light. He was in Chippendale's Rescue Rangers. And most recently, he was in Invincible, just to name a few. Of note, Peter was the fifth voice of the Donkey Eeyore from the Winnie the Pooh series from 1988 to 2017. But of course, Peter's most defining voice is that of Optimus Prime. In the original Transformers animated series, Transformers Prime series, Transformers Rescue Bots, Transformers Robots in Disguise, Transformers Titans Return, Transformers Powers of the Primes, as well as all the live-action Transformers film, which is the Michael Bay Transformers, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers Dark of the Moon, Transformers Age of Extinction, Transformers The Last Knight, Bumblebee, and Transformers Rise of the Beast. He was 85. Whew. Francis, you're familiar with his work?
I think I heard one or two of those shows before, but yeah, it's really sad. I heard about this. What's it happened like last? Was it last week?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's he's irreplaceable. It's kind of like James Earl Jones, unless I guess well they have AI doing James Earl Jones's voice now. So unless they have AI doing Optimus Prime, which is entirely possible these days.
Hassan, you're a fan.
I'm a fan of Peter Cullen, not AI Peter Cullen.
Why are you? You haven't met him yet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to meet him. Yeah, there's like you said, there's really not much to say. His record speaks for itself. It's a tremendous loss to everything. I mean, he and Frank Welker, you know, were just part of everything. Like every iteration of for especially for Generation X. Every iteration of any cartoon, famous or infamous, he had a hand in somehow. And I'm really happy that he got a kind of renaissance when the in 2009 when they lobbied for him to be the voice of Optimus Prime, and he kind of came back into the forefront. Because I think I'm pretty sure everybody would remember him, but I think those movies made him a household name. You know, all over again. So, I don't know. I don't really have, you know, it's devastating. I don't really have too much anecdotally to say about it other than it's tremendous. The loss is tremendous.
It's weird because people who are Transformers fans know that this is the 40th anniversary of the Transformers, the movie. And
yeah,
ironically, the marketing has been all about the death of Optimus Prime. And then the guy dies. I'm like, somebody is scrambling right now.
It's a really bad coincidence.
Yeah. I remember I was sitting in the theater, saw Transformers. I'm gonna go see it again next month. But I just remember how impactful it was sitting in the theater, just outside of everything, because I was in the theater, and you're in the theater with some screaming kids. You can hear a whole bunch of loud screaming kid noises. But when this part happened with the music on, right now it's happening. It was dead silence in the movie theater. I was blown away by that as much as what was going on the screen. Like, oh my god, it's so quiet in here. What happened? And yeah, this was something.
That's why I hate going to the movies, because all the kids are screaming, so...
Well, they should have to kill off one of the major characters, and they'll be all quiet. Problem solved.
Yeah, so every movie they should just kill off a major character.
He was 85. So that's it for the sad news. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
Calling all comic fans, Hurricane, Long Island's only benefit comic art convention, returns in 2026. Join us May 9th and December 12th at Bethany Congregational Church, East Rockaway, New York. Grab toys and collectibles, dig through comic books, meet artists and writers, enter amazing raffles, enjoy food, fellowship, and rock your cosplay. Just a $5 donation gets you in from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit Hurricane on Facebook, and on Instagram it's Hurricane LI for details. Hurricane, where heroes unite for good.
I'm Olivia Younkers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions, LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From the Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Michael McManus. I played Kai on Lex. You're listening to It Came From The Radio.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hello, this is Carrie Hoskins. I play Sonya Blade in Mortal Kombat. You are listening to It Came From The Radio.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hi, this is Tammy Stronach, best known for playing the Childlike Empress in The NeverEnding Story and upcoming Man and Witch fantasy film. You are listening to It Came From The Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Gone. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking with Mr. Francis Bonet in the studio.
Hello, hello.
And Mr. Hassan Galvin on the phone.
Hassan Galvin.
Hi, Mark.
I hear an echo, Hassan. Okay, just making sure you can address that. So as we always go with the non-sad news, so from the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. The new Spider-Man sequel, Part 4, for those of you not paying attention, has held on to the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in an additional $39 million in ticket sales in its fourth week of release, beating out the new Insidious sequel, which is Part 6, for those of you who lost count, which was me, which came in number two spot, making $25.1 million in its first week of release. For those of you keeping track, the aforementioned Spider-Man film is now the highest grossing film of this year so far, with $863.3 million, followed by The Odyssey at $544.9 million. Insidious comes in all the way at number 36. I don't think it's going to be number one.
Probably not.
Did you see, did you see Insidious, Spider-Man, and or Odyssey?
I've seen Spider-Man of those three.
Okay.
And it was good. I enjoyed it. It was it did a little bit better than Supergirl.
Slightly.
Yeah, just slightly better. But it was a fun movie.
Okay. So would you recommend people who haven't yet to see it, go see it?
Yes, if you haven't seen it. Like, I just saw it last week. I was trying to avoid spoilers.
Oh, my God.
I know. I was waiting for my older daughter. We always go see all the Marvel movies together, and then she's getting ready to go to college, and it was just... I was like, it's 3 weeks. I've avoided spoilers. This is it. We have to go now, or I'm going to go see it without you. So wow. We ended up seeing it last week.
And Hassan, what about you? I know you saw Spider-Man. I know you saw Odyssey, right?
I know you saw Odyssey. Yes, I did. I saw both of them.
And no Insidious?
I have not seen Insidious. I don't see horror movies that much anymore. I lost my stamina for them. I've lost my taste for them. But I probably will see it because it is doing so well. I just haven't done it yet.
But you're not into horror movies anymore?
I mean, I got to be in a particular mood for it. It's kind of on a pass-fail basis with me. There's a story as to why that is, but we don't have time for it.
All right, fine. I saw Spider-Man. I thought it was the most Spider-Man comic movie you can possibly get. I have not seen Odyssey.
It's the most Spider-Man as Spider-Man movie as ever Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
There's a lot of Spider-Man happening in that movie. He's Spider-Maning it. For this one.
I mean, that makes sense to me.
yeah, thank God. I would hate for Spider-Man to Spider-Man and Supergirl. But
well, there are movies.
If he was gonna...
There are movies where you're supposed to have the main guy not doing stuff as the main guy. For example, I'm going to bring this up, Legend of the White Dragon, which was Jason David Frank's final film in the theaters for you Power Rangers fans out there. There's not a lot of Jason David Franking and White Dragoning stuff happening in that movie, I'm just saying.
You shouldn't have gone to see that, though.
It would have been better if Spider-Man was in it.
That's kind of your fault.
It is my fault, and it would have been better if Spider-Man was in it.
Every movie would be better with Spider-Man in it.
Alright, so we'll go with this one since we're mentioning Spider-Man. So from where is it? I lost it. Oh, what about the next guy department? None other than Spider-Man and or collector, or, to be honest, a guy with a lot of money. to spare, Roger Gaylord has sparked some controversy online as he recorded, most likely to get the book graded, a current Spider-Man actor Tom Holland autographing a low-grade copy of Amazing Fantasy 15, which is the first appearance of Spider-Man. The argument is that, A, if Tom should sign it in the first place, because he really doesn't have anything to do with the creation of the book, and B, does it increase or decrease the value of the comic? Francis, what do you think?
I would say, honestly, I think it would decrease the value of the comic. He's an actor. He's playing Spider-Man. He had nothing to do with the creation of Spider-Man. I don't know. I mean, unless you could find a buyer who would be willing to spend extra money just because Tom Holland signed it, but I think that was a mistake to have him sign it.
What about you, Hassan? What are your thoughts?
I kind of agree. Tom Holland, I mean, he's part of the Spider-Man mythology now, but he's not the proprietor of it. He has nothing to do with that comic book. It's not going to increase the value of that comic for any true collector. So I don't see what good it would do. It's just a gimmick.
So, Hassan, do you think that Tom should have been like, I'm not part of it, I shouldn't sign it?
I mean, no. He's a celebrity. They handed him something to sign. Giving your signature to something is benign. I don't think he was claiming ownership or something like that. I think he's probably doing it for promotional, for some kind of promotional stunt, which is fine. I don't have any grudge against it, but I just don't think it added any value to the comic book. I think that was the question, right?
Yeah, well, that was the follow-up, is that should he have signed it at all?
They should have had him sign the poly bag. There you go. Then you can take it out.
Or sign the slab. You sign it on the outside.
Sign the Mylar cover. There you go.
I mean, I can see the idea behind it, but I think it was just a bad idea.
This reminds me of, I don't know how many of you know Pat the NES Punk. He's a YouTuber. Back a few years ago, someone had him sign the Nintendo World Championship cartridge, which is, it's worth like $30,000,
$40,000. The gold card, right?
Nothing to do with it. He's just an NES collector. So he actually signed it not on the label, but he signed it on the... So you could kind of, if you used like a... What's it called? Alcohol or something to get it off.
Right.
But I think it's the same thing. It's like, why would you have him sign? He had nothing to do with the creation of that game or the value.
Yeah, it's just a gimmick. It's just a gimmick. I mean, look, to some kids, they're not going to care. To some kids, Tom Holland is Spider-Man. They don't know who Tobey Maguire was. They don't know who Andrew Garfield is. They don't know any of these other Spider-Mans that came before him from Adam.
Well, they would know if they saw the
last. As far as they're concerned, that celebrity signed their comic book. Spider-Man signed their comic book. That's going to be fine for them. But, for collectors, for the hard-headed, super gatekeeper-y collectors, I don't think it does anything for them.
Hmm. All right. So moving on from the... Well, that's one way to make a buck department. None other than Disney has announced the new re-release of Avengers Endgame, Part 4, for those of you keeping track, will have two different versions when it comes back to theaters on September 25th. According to the press release, quote, "The special encore presentation of the record-breaking film includes an exclusive look at the highly anticipated 18th December release of Marvel Studios' Avengers Doomsday. An additional sneak peek at the film will also be available to audiences who see Avengers Endgame Encore on IMAX and Infinity Vision certified screens." Now, you may ask, what is Infinity Vision? According to the website, Infinity Vision is a certification, not a technology, and it verifies that a theater meets the high standards for quality, sound, and projection. Theaters have to apply for this certification and are evaluated against rigorous standards across key areas focusing on a minimum screen of 45 feet wide, the theaters with immersive sound, Atoms, or 7.1 sound, and a projection has to have theater with brightness levels reaching either 14 foot Lamberts in 2D and or 6 foot Lamberts in 3D. And you may ask, what the hell is a foot Lambert?
What?
The internet says it is a, quote, traditional U.S. unit of measure that measures the brightness or luminance of light reflected on emitted from a surface. Ha! There. So, Francis, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what that is that you all you just said right now, but it sounds like a marketing gimmick to me.
I, it's It's now you have to get your movie theater certified to show a movie, and then they're going to show extra stuff. I think that's really bad. What do you think, Hassan?
It's going to do wonders for the movie industry that's thriving right now. You know, just absolutely killing it out there.
Hey,
it's going to do wonders for it.
I mean, just the fact that now you have to do an extra thing for your theater, and you're not... I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that they're going to force people now to have to get a certification. And I'm sure it's not a free thing.
Yeah, they probably charge for that.
Right, and you know, you have to pay, you know, a couple hundred
thousand
dollars.
To some extent, though, to some extent, it's good because some entertainment places do have to up their game, you know, to make it worth your while to come out to see it. Like, a lot of times... You know, movies are really niche now because it's not the best experience you can have watching a movie anymore. And most people can do that at home.
And you can pause to go to the bathroom.
I was going to say that. Yes.
Well,
exactly.
That's
everybody's number one reason.
That is
by the way.
Yeah, not number two, number one.
But that's not Infinity Vision.
Well, you
could
do number one really quick.
That's actually something else that they'd be called instead of Infinity Vision. But, Francis, you've gone to movies, right?
Yeah, once or twice.
Right. So would you now pay extra to go see this particular movie in Infinity Vision just to get the extra whatever the hell they're making you get?
To be honest, I mean, I would go see the movie if it had it or if it didn't have it.
But then you're not going to get all the extra bells and whistles for this.
It's kind of like when you go to see a 3D movie. This is the way I see it. You're like, wow, this is great. You're going to see Avatar for the first time. Wow, this is amazing. 10 minutes later, you forget about it. You're into the story. So, yeah, I'm going to be interested in it for about 10 minutes. And then I'm not going to be paying attention anymore to the visuals and the effects. I'm just going to be entertained by the story.
Okay. I just have to say there is a little charm to going to a hole-in-the-wall movie theater.
Yes,
to see,
that is true.
To see certain things, but, you know, whatever. It's Disney. You know how I feel about Disney. So moving on, last bit of news. Let's see. From the You Can't Say a Movie is Fake, Even Though It Is Fake department. None other than former To Catch a Predator host Chris Hansen has purchased pre-show commercial spots to play before every theatrical screening of the upcoming movie Primetime, a film which is based on the Esquire article Tonight on Dateline This Man Will Die, which in turn is about the suicide of Bill Contradat, who was on Dateline the show Catch a Predator. Bill's sister brought a wrongful death lawsuit against NBC and it was settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. The commercial is with Chris urging viewers via a QR code to go to his subscription-based true crime streaming network called True Blue. Of note, Chris has nothing to do with the movie and, according to reports, wasn't even consulted before or during filming, and in the commercial, Chris had intended to explicitly warn moviegoers that Primetime is, quote, a Hollywood fantasy version, unquote, of real events. However, the line was removed over legal and backlash concerns involving the distributor. Hassan, what do you think of that?
I don't even know what all that means.
So let me break it down. The guy who they're making a movie about has nothing to be involved in the movie because they're not making the movie about him. They're making a movie about the article about him. So that's how they're able to make the movie without any legalese.
Yeah, and the thing that led to the lawsuit,
right? Yes.
It's not good. It's not good for Chris Hansen, but. Why would he expect anything different? Second of all, he made his entire career about ambushing people, and people who deserved it. Let me be honest.
So they don't have to pay him anything.
A lot of them were convicted afterwards, so that's proven fact. But his whole career was ambushing people. I don't know why he's surprised he got ambushed here.
Yeah, he deserves
it. It's like his whole modus operandi.
So you asked a question. What was the question you asked?
Oh, I don't remember.
Well, he said, does Chris get any pay for it? And I was going to say, well, you got to say that again. But no, Chris does not get any type of money at all.
Oh, yes, that's what I did.
So
that's why
I have a short-term memory.
So the fact that he decided to spend his own money to make commercials in front of a movie that's not about him, I think that's kind of slick. That's kind of interesting that he would do that.
Yeah, that's a good way to fight back.
Yeah.
I've always said a lot about the biopics, that they're not real, and that this is something, this goes to exactly what I've been saying, that it's not a real movie about a real thing, which is not real. It's so many levels of craziness on this.
They have to make it more entertaining for the viewer. So anytime you go to see a biopic, I know, like, how much of this is actually based on reality and how much are they just embellishing the story?
Right. So this movie isn't based on the actual event. It's based on an article talking about the event.
Yeah,
but who cares?
Based on nothing,
you're only going to the movie to be entertained. You're not entertained more by reality. You're entertained. It's just about the entertainment factor.
So reality is
stop being a gatekeeper, Mark. Don't gatekeep.
Reality's boring.
Reality is set aside for TV. Is that what it is?
Reality television?
Yeah.
Because everybody loves reality TV. They love that crap.
Reality television isn't real television either.
I mean, I know. And they use the word reality in it, which is double, triple craziness.
It says real as TikTok.
Yeah, and they trademarked it. So you can't call your stuff, which would actually probably be reality television, you technically can't call it that because the label's been trademarked. How do you like that? They took reality from us.
What kind of reality is this?
So, we're almost out of time. Hassan, we're almost out of time. Do you have any final thoughts?
My final thoughts is I'll try to be there next week.
Thank you. Francis, final thought?
Don't wait 3 or 4 weeks to see Spider-Man. See it opening night if you can.
That's a better one.
Yeah.
All right, so that is it for this new segment for everybody listening to us on the air. We'll see you next week. Everybody else stay tuned for more. It came from the radio.
This is Michael Bell, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe, and I am with It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I've mentioned many times, people who are fans of the shows, people listening to the shows, know that I am a huge Power Ranger fan. You also probably know I'm a huge Johnny On Bosch fan. Johnny On Bosch played Adam on the Power Rangers series. He came back a couple of times, and as a matter of fact, for those of you who are keen Power Ranger fans yourself, will recognize the transition morphing time song that we use whenever we take it away with the news. We did so even earlier in this episode. I've actually managed to meet Johnny On Bosch on 2 separate occasions. We did a live stream with him at a convention he did way back in the days before live streaming was a thing. The video is kind of crappy, but the audio is sort of all right. If you go check on our YouTube page, it's on there. I think it's actually on the Comic Book Novice page. It might not be on the It Came From the Radio page, because that was the name of our show before we transitioned over to It Came From the Radio. The reason I'm bringing all this up is because, as a huge Power Ranger fan, as a huge Johnny On Bosch fan, and also since our show does celebrate the independent filmmaker, I thought I would mention and talk about and discuss the new movie written, directed, and starring Johnny On Bosch called Spades. First off, I want to mention that spoilers may and most likely will be mentioned. Spades, without giving too much away, despite the fact that I just said spoilers may be mentioned, is about a former war vet dealing with female traffickers, and there are some supernatural elements to it. His lead is actually Jason Narvi, who played Skull in Power Rangers. Now, there was a movie, I remember when I was working at Blockbuster at the time, that there was a movie called Sudden Heist or something like that, starring the two of them. And I never got a chance to see that movie. And I always wanted to see that movie because I wanted to see the two of them together. But this, it would be the first time ever that I saw Jason Narvi doing anything but being Skull. Right off the bat, I was blown away by his acting, by his performance. He really did shine. I have to say I was invested in the character. He really portrayed it very well, and I could believe it was very believable. So right there, it was a pleasant surprise right off the bat. The action was decent. The story was pretty
pretty good with human trafficking, and the good versus evil. I did find that he had maybe one or two flashbacks too many, and maybe the special effects could have been better. However, that being said, I do know that it's an independent film. And so, much like any other independent film, you have to give certain concessions to it. You have to be like, okay, I'm going to let that go. And that's one of the things I did, because knowing it's an independent film, it's very hard, as I've said many times on the show, to make a film. While it was hurting to the movie, it wasn't detrimental. It was something I could overlook, because the story and the acting and the characters were pretty engaging. I did actually see his short film called Exodus that Johnny made, and I thought that was pretty cool. I actually felt that that was better than this movie, but I think this movie was a decent watch. It was plenty of action, a lot of gunplay. It actually had the strongest part, I'll say it again, was the relationship between Jason Narvi's character and the daughter. I felt that that was the strongest point of the film. Everything else was just put on top, like, you know, the bonus material, like the bare bones of the story was really good. I was a little disappointed that I didn't get to see as much of Johnny as I wanted, but that I could attribute to that most of the times his character had a helmet on and you couldn't see it was him, and it could have been a stunt double. But I actually saw an interview with him where he said he just did most of the action himself. So that is him most of the time in the helmet doing his own stunts, which is actually kind of cool. And I also thought it was great that he didn't hog the spotlight. Like, it's his movie, he wrote and directed it, but, and he starred in it, but he wasn't the lead, if you understand my point. He was there in essence and spirit and in the movie. He didn't have to be on camera all the time. The movie does have a little twist at the end, and it actually can give you some type of ambiguity as to the meaning of the film. I've mentioned this a couple times on the show before, that the movie 12 Monkeys, which is a high on my watchable movies, there was what made that movie so great, 12 Monkeys that is, was that there was a whole scene where they were explaining that depending where you are in your life would give you a different outlook on the situation. So watching the movie the first time, and then if you saw it a second time, knowing the twist, you can actually interpret it a different way. So it gave it rewatchability, which I like. And so that was an interesting thing. I have my own theories about the big twists at the end and how Johnny's character and Jason's character intertwined with each other. I've also mentioned many times on the show that sometimes if you listen to the filmmaker and how the film came to be and what was the ideas behind it, it actually can make you appreciate the film more. This is one of those cases. So originally, I was going to give it a solid 7, maybe a 6.5. But now I can give it a 7.5 to an 8 as well as an enjoyability. I think that if you're a fan of action, if you're a fan of sci-fi, if you're a fan of Power Rangers, if you're a fan of Johnny On Bosch, I think you'll enjoy this movie. You should go check it out. I felt they could have leaned a little more into the character development of Jason as the police detective, and more with his daughter, because I think that that was the foundation of the film. And I really have to say it didn't even need the supernatural twist to it. I think that the movie actually might have been stronger if it didn't have the supernatural twist to it, but that would change the twist ending, and that would pretty much change the entire movie in and of itself. So that's why a solid 6.5, 7, 7.5, maybe 8 on a good day. But I think you guys will enjoy it if you're a fan of independent filmmaking, you're a fan of Giant Box, as I mentioned, fan of Power Rangers. Go out and watch it. Hopefully, you will enjoy it as much as I did. And with that, we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with more. It Came From the Radio.
Looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Rare Products NY has you covered. Our universal pergolas are modern, durable aluminum structures designed to withstand the elements while adding style and value. Enjoy all weather protection with adjustable louvers and glass options. Stay cozy in the winter with modernized screens and enclosures. Create a luxury ambiance with built-in LED lighting. And give your home or business a modern look that keeps guests coming back. For your on-site evaluation, call 516-225-8271. Email rareproductsny@gmail.com or visit rareproductsny.com. Rare Products NY. We've got you covered.
You are listening to It Came From the Radio, and I'm Jennifer Elise Feldman, Marks in Studio. I'm here with Exo Huang. She's a Los Angeles-based filmmaker, an AFI Conservatory graduate who grew up in China. She's worked in radio, events, produced documentaries, produced content for media and brands advice. She's done a lot of stuff. And we can get into so much. I watch her other films. I really enjoy it. I think there's one, I Hate Love, very cool. But today, we're discussing her latest film, which I watched twice and I really enjoyed, called Fortune House. This film offers a magical realist immigration fable as a desperate immigrant delivery driver stumbles into a mahjong parlor run by three demons, where he enters a demon's deal. Win the game, and they will grant him a green card. Blending magical realism with dark humor, the film transforms the anxieties, compromises, and hidden transactions of immigrant survival into a Faustian bargain, asking a single question. When the powerless are forced to negotiate with a system rigged against them, what do they have left to put on the table? So welcome to the show. Thank you for making this film. Really enjoyed it. And really simply, what inspired this film?
Yes, thank you for having me. I would say like the very beginning journey of this film starting around like 2 years ago, and me and my executive producer Wei, we're doing research, basically trying to like learn how was like the immigrant history happening here, and so we're trying to gather some image, including some like drawing on newspaper and magazines like since like 1900, because since that's like the very beginning, like the Asian immigrants starting to live life on this land. So we find out there's a lot of drawing and comic trying to draw immigrants as a monster. Let's say you're gonna see like a Chinese chef, they have like, they would draw them as like 8 tentacles, 8 arms like in the back, because they're trying to describe that they steal local people's job. You're gonna see like people like dressing as like Qing Dynasty kind of outfit. They have like long nails appear like late night on the street to depict that as like a monster appear, will like rob like the citizens. So we got like really attracted by the image like this, because I feel like that's the really essence of the image, what's like where the people's fears comes from. So that's like that's like very beginning of it. We're just trying to do like arzine at the very beginning, just like put all of the monster image together to make it like a little art book. But like as long as we go deeper and we realize that there's like so many character in it, and it's actually not only the amount of information just like for like a cultural phenomenon, it can be rich enough to support like a narrative. So we're starting to design a story around it. That's like the very beginning of the film. Yeah.
Faustian bargain. So that's basically, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, you're basically putting your morals aside to get something that you want, which I was thinking a lot about. You know, I'll interview people as a topic of the show. And it's like a lot of people, at least on the Instagram today, I'm like, they're compromising their morals, their integrity, their dignity to get views. I mean, we see it all over the place. And then obviously, you know, a little more importance, getting citizenship in the U.S., people do some wild things, including, you know, playing mahjong with demons with really long nails. So that's your story in the Fortune House for anyone who wants to see it. So Okay, so why Mahjong? Why would he play a game of Mahjong to get the citizenship? Why did you pick that rather than tennis or, you know, a Vegas gambling game or street hockey? Why Mahjong?
Yeah, so I think we're trying to find a kind of space or like a human relationship that bargain, negotiation can happen with the game. So Mahjong has like four people. And in the past, we like when I was a kid, I see like elders in my family play Mahjong on the table. It really, how you're going to play it also depends on who's the elders or who's the boss on the table. So things were like the power dynamic will also shift along the game. And I find it's like going to be fun to present through like when Mo trying to find a way out, like trying to find a way to stay here. So Mahjong becoming like a perfect like game to show it.
My grandma Lucy, she died at 102 years ago, but I watched her and her friends play Mahjong, and it was very different than this. Their nails weren't this long. So quick question on the makeup. I'm a makeup artist. I'll do special effects. I've made custom nails for a movie where I burned the nails and lit them on fire. That's for a Friday the 13th film. Victim No More shout out. So how long did it take to put on the nails? And what I found is that the nails can fall off a lot of times. You know, the actors have to go to the bathroom. They're people. So I always tell them, I told one guy, bring your wife with you. She's going to have to help you go to the bathroom because these long nails, they can fall off. So did you have any issues with the nails falling off?
Yeah, so basically for the whole look, including like the face paint and the costume and the nails, we need an hour to get them done. And we're trying to get like the monster shot done like within an hour. So that's like pretty packed time. So once we put like, it's funny that once the people put on nails, they can't do anything else, right? You can't even like play on the phone. So once like every actor is finished that, they just like sit around the table. And I just feel like they also enjoy this look. So once like actor got put on any other like more fantasy elements, they were gradually trying to put another personality like on the acting. That's also the things I feel like the nails and the costumes helps a lot.
It does help a lot. Right now you've got me right out of the shower. You know, I do radio pretty down to earth, put a little lip stuff on. But when I dress up, a different persona comes through. It really does help when you look different, you really do feel different. So it definitely helps the acting for sure. So what's one thing you learned? So I always say, you know, you're going to learn something when you're on a film set. I'm on film sets all the time. I always get anxiety before because I know I'm going to learn something. Like one time I learned that a regular fan won't blow a lady's dress when she's on the stairs. We needed to use a leaf blower. So I didn't know that. I thought a fan worked. So what are some things that you learned on this set that you didn't know before making Fortune House?
Yeah, because like a lot of my film in the past, they all have like bigger action. They're always walking around or like rare for me to done like a 10-minute conversation on the table, on a square table. So that once we're entering like the storyboard design, I realized that it's actually really hard. So, you know, like on the conversation scene, you're always going to follow like 180 rules. You're trying to keep audience know where they sit and what they talk and what's the power dynamic while they're talking each line. So a round table, like a square table, since they have two sides, normally we see like a screen, just like one side. We're seeing them on the stage or we sit on one spot to looking at people to talk. But when you're trying to do like a four people conversation, your perspective will change. You will sometimes jump the line to get a better take of like a power dynamics, like lower character. So that's like really, that makes things complicated to design because you're going to like turn your camera around. And when you're trying to jump the line, you're going to find like a way to make as a transition the audience can know where they sit rather than, oh, why they, one suddenly they sit on the right, one suddenly they sit on the left. So that's the things I learned a lot from shooting like Mahjong because four people are going to play constantly and talk a lot. So yeah, I learned a lot from like what you design, going to always based on what you want audience to feel for them. If you want to feel closer, you want them to feel like more threatening, you probably pull further or like you're trying to use more extreme angle, but when you're trying to feel closer, you're trying to make audience feel like the character is kind of fragile now, then you get like closer or you get like more details on their little movements. So that kind of, if you put this as like a first priority, then no matter how you jump the line, it will always work because like audience follows your emotional plot rather than like a space like position. Yeah.
Very interesting. So what are some of your favorite things about shooting? And then maybe what are some of your least favorite things or things that you would never do again that happened on this film?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I feel like the favorite thing it happens so much, it never happens before, is like shoot. There's like a shoot at the beginning of the film, he's like running on the street on downtown. It's actually really close to where I live. And shooting someplace that's like close to your life and you see something really happens in the screen that's like very close to where you live every day is like really magic experience. It's also, and also I know during it, I know better where to put the camera and the, what angle will make it look like more narrow. So that's the things I love the most. I feel like, oh, I live my life and also I learned something from real life and really show like the experience where it appears while we're on set. Like, and the least favorite thing, basically the whole shoot's done in 3 days and the whole conversation and the whole mahjong game, we're trying to get it done within a day and a half. So after doing this film, I know how much work you need to do for like a square table conversation. Next time I'll definitely put more time in it. But like we like catch time on trying to catch it on time, like so extreme that we barely get like too much take on that. But I wish I would schedule more time because it feels like just 4 people sitting here and not, it's not sounds like you're gonna need a lot of time in scheduling, but actually that's the thing, you will need like more complicated design while you're doing storyboard. So that's the part I wish I can do better the next time in scheduling.
I thought it looked great. You know, I'm not a pro on everything in filmmaking, but I really enjoyed it. And I liked the sign outside on Fortune House where he discovers it. I like the way it glows. And you know, I did a little research on you, and you mentioned that you like to focus on underground communities, like the LGBT community. You did a whole LGBTQ dance club film. And how come you like to focus on the underground communities and not the mainstream pop star like Britney Spears, Sabrina Carpenter?
Yeah, so my whole like director career starting from Vice, I'm working as a director in Vice. So mm-hmm. The whole subject they focus on is about younger generation for sure, but they trying to exploring a life that people never imagine that they can live through to bring people like courage to, oh, so I can also do that. There's not only one way that we can live a life, or like there's not like a fixed way to live what you want. So I feel like the reason I really attracted to the life that not got represented a lot on the screen is because I feel like a lot of time when we're watching film, we're trying to see how the character figure out their own issue as a reflect that we how we can figure out our own issue. So for me, like a more niche way, or like a way that never shown before, that's the part I would feel like the magic of the movie, that oh, so I can feel this way, or I'm allowed to feel this way, and it's okay to feel this way, then how I can do to cope with it. There's like so many ways, and it makes me feel like free while I'm watching like or like hear a story. So
right, so I think there's always some level of chaos when you're filming, or something unexpected and some level of risk. And you mentioned that you like to run your film set kind of like a laboratory. I'm similar that way. Like there's certain formulas that you have in place and you get things down to a bit of a science. And then when you get there, you're super prepared and then you're ready for anything to go in that spontaneity. So like, what are some things that you recommend to other filmmakers to get that laboratory tight and working and that well-oiled machine, and to get those results you want from the beaker that you use with the different substances? Like, what are some things you might recommend?
Yeah, I feel like this theory comes up from like doing documentary stuff for like so many years. So every time if there's a good story coming out from the set, you sometimes depends on luck. Sometimes it comes on how your character live their life and what kind of adventure they're going to take you to. But the most important thing is everyone feels that they can express themselves on set and they can just relax and being themselves. That's going to trigger the most, the best event, like in the show. So from that part of the experience, I realized it's also the same as a narrative film set. If everyone can feel like they are free to use their creative to make what they think is the best thing, and they somehow match together, come like and make the art together, and also same for the actors, if they feel fully relaxed and have like unlimited space to express what's their understanding of the actor, then the things won't go bad, because like if they are being themselves, then the character in your film, in the frame, is also like being themselves, and we'll all have the space to talk about it. And in the end, it's a good work. So I really appreciate that when everyone's idea bump together, then we create some more new things on set rather than just like focus on whatever we imagined before, because that's just text. And yeah.
So I found I like to work with people who have some type of meal plan or workout plan, some type of regimen, because what I found in almost 42 years is if you can run your life and be organized and control what you put in your mouth and how you sleep, or my sleep is all over the place, so I need to work on that. I'm definitely working on that. And your fitness, you can on some level control things on a film set. It's not a hard and fast rule, but it's like if you can build your life, you can build a film set. And if you can run a film set like a well-oiled machine, a lot of times you can build your life. There is some correlation. So my favorite people have some level of health discipline, some level of sleep discipline. They just seem to make things a lot easier for me and the whole cast. So what are some types of people or some characteristics or traits you look for when you're teaming up with other people? Because we need other people to get this done. We need a reliable team.
Yeah, at first, I'm definitely looking for crew that can understand the story first. It doesn't have to be like you have exactly the same experience as that character lives through. Just because you understand, like when use Fortune House as an example. Have you ever feel things that you're in the middle of the conversation? You suddenly feel like, oh, am I saying anything wrong? Am I laughing at the right joke? And like some kind of like, am I got like excused out of the group? If we can't understand this feeling, then we're trying to depict it in the story. And if every crew member knows how they feel, then what they did were like around the same. So I would say the first thing is like, if we can relate it to the similar feeling, like with the same of the story. And the second, I'm definitely looking for someone's like sensitive and also knows what they do, because like we always have like, because this is such like a kind of a work type that everyone too closely works together, and like and also affect like what is going to look on the frame at every second. So I feel like if you're a sensitive person and you always have like open-minded, you're not taking mm-hmm. anything personal, and you're willing to share whatever comes up like as a sparkle while you're on set, then that's like perfect things that like everyone can work together. I feel like that's also how, what kind of person my cast and my crew is. And I really, I feel like I got like also like taken care by them a lot, like while we shooting.
Yeah. Empathy on set matters, sensitivity. So let me throw it back to you for a free for all question. What are some things or anything you'd like listeners to know about Fortune House or you, anything you want to tell us?
Yeah, let me think about it. I would say first thing for sure, join our premiere this Friday. It's like in August 7th, this Friday. Mm-hmm. It's gonna mm-hmm. be 7:45 p.m. at Regal North Hollywood. We're all mm-hmm. gonna stay around here before and after the screening. So come here and talk to us. We really value like how people feel after they see the film. And this is gonna be our first premiere also. So we'd love to meet fans and like audiences in person, because like the theater is like the ultimate experience of like you're watching the film. So, and the second thing I would say, we're also trying to do a mini series around this concept. So there's a bigger world, Mo trying to find a way to stay, and he definitely worked with Demon this time, and he ended up becoming like friends with Demon, because Demon is also stuck between human and Hill. Like immigrants stuck between two countries. So, but in the end, Mo realized that you gotta say goodbye to the demons and create like a bigger topic around like how we feel, what's the sense of belonging feels like. We're going to talk from this perspective towards immigrants' like story in the season. And we recently trying to get more drafts for our pilot episode. Hopefully we can make the production running sometime. So stay in touch.
Yeah. It was very cool. I love the Mahjong scene. So before you give us your socials and where to find you, any of that, my one deep philosophical question I ask a lot, because there's demons in your film. Do you believe in demons? Do you think they exist in real life?
I do. Well, I think like the if demons exist, it's probably almost like similar to like, do you believe in God? Like God and demons kind of like just like two sides of a coin. Mm-hmm. I believe that like demon were here when you like trying to talk the thoughts in your brain. That's the time the demon were appear. And in the story, we're trying to have a demon, not only because of the historical like research that we've done before, and we also want us to say as a minority, it's not helpful that you always think about you are a minority when you're trying to live your life, right? So how like a person can cope with this feeling? What about we just treat us as like a villain? You look different than people. You're outside of them. You probably look scary to them, like outcast to them, but you're also the main character because villain is also the main character for a lot of film. So that's like one of the sense of feeling we're trying to express in the film, because like we got depicted as the monster, but like there's but they have their way to live this life through. So that's the I feel like yeah I wanna trust that demon we're here, but like this demon can be the demon in your heart, or like you wanna live a life like a cool demon, so it doesn't necessarily have to be like an evil demon. Like yeah.
Interesting. So give us your socials. We'll close out the interview. Where can we find you? Your IMDb. Whatever you want us to know.
Yeah, so my IMDb is Yihong Exa Huang, Yihong Exa Huang. So if you want to see more updates on social media, you can follow me on Instagram, D1G1H1H. That's my Instagram. I will update everything on it. And feel free to reach out to me if you want to have a screening, or like you want to see what's the next festival we're going to screen like in the following month. Yeah.
Yeah, really impressive. The I Hate Love was cool. This is cool. A series on Fortune House would be cool. Your work I was very impressive. It was very interesting and intriguing. So on that note, we're going to throw it back to Mark Torres for more It Came From the Radio. See you later.
If you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough.
Go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.